Good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. It's straight up 7 o'clock. I know you've probably been awake for like 2 or 3 hours waiting for me to come on. You know, I don't blame you because, you know, where else are you going to get high quality information like this? Oh, I forgot to look and see how long the program was supposed to last. Oh, okay. I've got it. Got it. Thank you, John Paul. All right. I want to read something to you this morning. It's so simple, so easy, so doable. This is a little brief extract about, or excerpt about endorphins. You know what endorphins are? Those are those happy, feel-good hormones. Since their discovery in the 1970s, endorphins have been credited with the post-exercise buzz experienced by people who exercise regularly. Now, researchers are finding that there's much more going on behind the scenes. Endorphins, which are similar in structure to morphine, are considered a natural painkillers because they activate opioid receptors in the brain that help minimize discomfort. They can also help bring about feelings of euphoria and general well-being. Endorphins are also involved in natural reward circuits related to activities such as feeding and drinking, sexual activity, maternal behavior. This explains sport and exercise psychologist Kip Matthews, PhD. When you exercise, your brain increases production of the neurotransmitter serotonin and norepinephrine, which I should interject and say, isn't that what all happy pills are based on, or antidepressants, should I say? So when you exercise, this increases your natural production of neurotransmitter serotonin and norepinephrine, which send messages throughout your nervous system. These messages might be the chemical equivalent of something like, you're running, this is awesome, you feel good, don't you? You're great. Exercise not only leads to an increase in serotonin and norepinephrine, which may in turn reduce depression and stress, it also may help ward off depression and anxiety by enhancing the body's ability to respond to stress. Quick story. I remember the year well. It was 1992 and a half. Yeah, maybe 1992 and a half. I had a woman that had started coming to see me that had just horrible arthritis. She hurt all the time, and she was going to completely let the world know. So if I even started the process of touching her shoulder or her back or her spine or her muscles or legs, oh my goodness. If she'd had a .357 Magnum, she probably would have pulled it out and shot me. But she let me know how horrible a physician I was because everything I did hurt her, which that's not the point this morning. Some people are just wired that way. They've got a lot of anger, they've got a lot of bitterness and resentment, and they hurt all the time, and they feel horrible, and they're cranky, and probably their sleep is bad. Anyway, to make a long story short, she kept coming back to see me. And I mean, I always do my best to help somebody. Sometimes better than others, but I always have just naturally wired that way. I want to do the best I can no matter what the circumstances are. So even though she was very difficult, what can I call her? I'm going to call her Lucy. I just chose that name arbitrarily. So Lucy would walk in and say, I would say, how are you doing? She said, I hurt. I can't move. And you could tell she was walking with the help of a cane and stiff, stove up, barely could move, just severe arthritis throughout the body. You probably, you know, have a picture, don't you? Well, one day she walks in the office and Lucy is not limping or using a cane. And she's moving pretty easily, like she's got flexibility, and she's spry, and she's supple, and she's flexible, and she's moving pretty easy. And so I said, how's it going? She said, wonderful. And I said to myself, what happened? And she responded with, Richard asked me out on a date. And so you can't tell me endorphins aren't real. Now, this is the hardest part of this equation. Does that mean we choose to have health problems sometimes? Well, I saw a woman that went from horrible, incurable arthritis to moving about as free and easily as humanly possible just because she was on cloud nine, because Richard had asked her out on a date. Now, is that real? I think it was. You know, it's my observation. Of course, you could say it's your opinion, Dr. Morgan. Well, yeah. But you know, this ain't rocket science, folks. If a person all of a sudden has a very, very good day, maybe something euphoric or lovely happened to them. Maybe they experienced a little bit of affection, which they haven't felt before. I think I've told the kids in the high school class over and over again that, you know, when you go to church sometimes on Sunday morning, there's going to be some older people there, and for all I know, they never get touched at all throughout the week, except on Sunday. So I, you know, try to encourage the high schoolers to go out of their way to touch those people, to shake their hand, to pat them on the shoulder, to give them a hug. Greet them with a holy kiss if that's your thing. Not my thing, but if that's your thing, greet them with a holy kiss. Anyway, they kind of look at me like, oh, what is this kook talking about? I'm not going to go up and touch somebody. I know you have them at your church. There's got to be some sweet older ladies that just smile nonstop at all the time, and probably some older men that smile nonstop. And they probably, the ones that are single and live alone, their spouse has passed away, or they're all by themselves for whatever reason, they don't get any touching or any physical affection. I mean, didn't I sort of cover that topic last week, that there is a hormone called, or if you want to call it a neurotransmitter / hormone, that's fine by me, oxytocin. Well, you get some of that stuff when you get touched. And I mean in the appropriate way. I can imagine like a young, you know, middle linebacker for Robert E. Lee's son grabbing his mom and shaking her around in a bear hug and hearing a few ribs crack. That's not really the type of touching I'm talking about. And you know what? What if nobody touches you? Then you've got only one option. You have got to be the one to initiate the touching. And of course, it's all risky, though. Because what if somebody doesn't want to be touched? What if they don't like your hugs? Well, that's just a risk you have to take. But you know what? I'm just curious. They have done studies, and they've shown that exercise daily is much more effective than Prozac or Zoloft. But you know what? Are we actually given that option when we go to the business doctor who has more at stake to make money than they do telling you the truth of what the study? I don't know. You tell me. I'll let you be the judge of that. I hear stories all day long, and I would say yes. The type of person comes to me is usually at my office because they've had tremendous frustration and disappointment. They haven't gotten answers, and they feel like they're being passed off from doctor to doctor just so they can be the guinea pig and try one medical procedure after the other, none of them doing anything to represent the root cause of the problem. I had a woman come in to see me the other day that had a foot problem, and before I know it, they've got heart monitors on her for 6 months, and they still can't find a heart problem, but she needs a heart monitor, and then she needs a visit with a cardiologist who can find nothing wrong, and then they want to do an MRI and CAT scan of the brain to make sure there's not something wrong up there, which nothing is wrong up there, but she's got a foot problem. But because she's not responding to their medical treatments, they just assume it's all in her head or it's a heart problem. She's been to the immune specialist also, or the hematologist, to see if she's got like some viral substance. You know how everything gets blamed on a virus. Anyway, if you want to join me on the radio this morning, there is a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. If you have a question or you want to make a comment, if nobody calls, I'm just going to lay it on you. All right, here goes. I stole this. Excuse me. I selectively borrowed this information from Joe Mercola. And the title of the article is, "This Year's Mammogram Month Launched with a Devastating Report on Harms and Lack of Effectiveness." This comes from Joe Mercola. And we have somebody's calling, so that's much more important than me reading. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, Dr. Morgan, I just had a question. What makes your skin on your arms and stuff get thin?
What's happening is, you know how like you have like an 8 or 9 year old in front of you, and they actually grow up and they become a teenage boy, and their skin is thick and hardy and strong. That's all collagen right there.
Yeah.
Just about all the skin is made from a protein called collagen, and I can make this complicated. I don't want to though. I'm just going to say when the skin becomes very thin, that's a sign that your body is losing these structural proteins to keep your body in good working order.
Yes.
The other thing that it represents is your body is winding down. It's got less and less nutrients in reserve. So this is maybe an analogy, but I think it's accurate. The number one predictor, not the only one, but the main one that's going to predict how long a man is going to walk on this earth, whether he's got sandals on or he's barefoot or he's wearing Adidas tennis shoes or penny loafers or boots, the number one factor is how physically strong he is. And so when the skin starts to become thin, you start to worry about the person. They're in this downward spiral of decaying a little bit faster than what they should be. Now, this is a relative conversation. If you're telling me the person you're talking about is 115 years old, I don't know that I'm going to spend a lot of energy worrying about that, because it's like anything else. When you study animals that live out in the wild, like a lion, for example, they live at the 95th percentile, which means they function at an extremely high level for like 99% of their life. It's only the last month of their life they go down a hill really, really quickly. So what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to die and pass away extremely healthy. It's just the candle just burns out. So when skin starts becoming thin, it would be in a woman an indication that she's headed toward osteoporosis and osteopenia and bone loss. Because, you know, a large percentage, 33%, that may not be large, but a percentage of the bones is made of protein. And that's what minerals attach to. So when you start seeing the skin become thin, that's a sign the person's pretty weak or getting weaker.
Is there anything that I could be taking, and my wife, that's causing it? Because this has just all happened in like the last 2 or 3 months.
Well,
and,
I mean, do you have a doctor that you go to?
Yeah.
Well, what do they say about it?
I haven't even asked them. I just noticed it just recently.
Well, no, that's good that you're being very observant. You're kind of picking up, hey, my skin is not as... What part of your body did you notice it?
It's on my arms, my forearm.
On your forearm?
Yeah, on the top, yeah.
Okay, well...
I've been taking curcumin? No, turmeric. I've been taking turmeric. I wonder if that could have anything to do with it.
Not that I'm aware of.
And garlic, I've been taking garlic.
No, I mean, I wish I could tell you. I haven't come across one study that says the moment you take garlic, your skin becomes thin.
Yeah, and it seemed like it's mostly on one arm. That's weird.
Well, yeah, and that may be, but, and this may sound kind of nutty, but you have two organs in your body called the kidneys. And so, like, if you were to go to a medical doctor and they said, let's just do a basic blood chemistry workup or kidney panel, there's one marker called BUN, and that's just an acronym for blood, urea, nitrogen. And let's just say the normal medical range is somewhere between 7 and 17. What would you think if that number was 18? What would that make you think of if your number was 1 point higher than what it should be? It would point toward something is stressing the kidneys, and maybe they're not working as efficiently as they should. Then,
yeah.
you've got a marker called creatinine. And let's just say that the creatinine level comes up just a hair high, 1.3. That, again, would be another clue that your kidneys, something's not working right. And then there's another marker called the BUN creatinine ratio. And if that comes back at 27 or 28, that would be too elevated also, which suggests something is stressing the kidneys and they're not working right. And then there's another marker called glomerular filtration rate, or GFR. And... if that one comes in lower than 60, well, my word, that's a surefire sign that the kidneys are weakening. And the reason why I'm covering the topic of the kidneys have a very interesting responsibility. They help your body manage protein. And it could be as simple as you're not getting enough protein. I mean, that's a possibility. Or it could be that your body's not able to digest and assimilate the protein. So there's a lot of ways to look at this.
I had some blood work done recently. My BUN is 9.
Okay, that's on the lower end of normal.
Yeah.
What is the GFR number?
Just a second, sir.
Oh, that's all right. It usually just has the letters G, as in Gordon, F as in Frank, and R as in Ralph.
88.2.
And see, that's a pretty good number.
Yeah, everything was good on it. I don't know.
Well, but that's what I see.
If I bump my arm, it's only happened twice, maybe in the last 6 months, a certain way, then it causes it to have a bruise looking spot.
Oh,
on
well,
it.
That's different then. I wish you'd said that to begin with, because
the
organ system that's most responsible for controlling how thick or how thin the blood is, that would all be the liver. What do you think they use stuff called heparin? Because it comes from the hepatic system or the liver. And this is a very, very complex pathway, but what happens is if the liver is not working the way it should, you can start to see this easy bruising and tearing. So, you know, I mean, doesn't it say in Psalms that I will praise thee because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made?
Yeah.
I'll be the first to admit I don't understand the half of it. But you know what? You need to go back to your doctor and say, I need you to figure this out right now. Tell me why my skin's becoming thin and why I can just barely touch something and all of a sudden. But you know, the other thing that I would look at, in the human body, you have all these glands and tissues that release what's called growth hormone, or you have the pituitary. And when you start seeing a drop-off in human growth hormone, then you don't regenerate tissues very well that are based on protein. And so another way of looking at this is, if you're looking, are you out in the sunshine right now?
No.
Well, just look at the skin on your arms in good light.
And
if you see all these white spots on your forearm, like a loss of pigmentation, just small white flakes, do you see those?
Mm-hmm. No, sir.
So your skin's perfectly evenly tanned throughout?
Pretty well. Yeah,
okay.
Pretty well.
Well, I mean, all I can do is give you information. That is the drawback of radio, is I can't reach through the microphone to examine you to tell you what the issue is. But we might look at protein metabolism. It may be something that's related to the gut, because ultimately you've got to be able to deliver protein and collagen to your skin if it's going to be in good repair. And if there's a glitch where you cannot do that, then, yeah, technically a person can eat really good wholesome food, but if they can't deliver it, and sometimes that's based on the type of microbes or flora that live in the gut.
Yes, sir.
There's two basic types of bacteria that live in the gut. One's called Firmicutes. The other one is a species called the Bacteroidetes. And when Firmicutes are elevated, that's when you have a hard time delivering protein and nutrition and oxygen to the tissues. So if you look at your toenails, do your toenails look pretty awesome and pink and clean and clear?
Well, pretty fair. Not perfect.
Well, I mean, what you would see is any time that your toenails start to become thicker than what they used to be, that's a sign you're not transporting oxygen to your toes very well.
Yes,
sir. So, are your toenails perfect?
No, they're probably a little bit thick, but, you know, I'm almost 70 years old, too.
Well, but you called me and asked me a question about the skin getting thin, which means you're interested in taking care of yourself and you want to see some improvement.
Yes, sir.
So I'm perfectly fine if you're 80 years old and your toenails are the normal shape and size. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
And if that trend changes and that improves, that's fine also.
I would say like a 16th of an inch, a big toe nail.
Well, and there's got to be some clue somewhere in your blood work. So,
and my wife's doing the same thing, and she's only 55, so it's probably like you're saying, it's probably.
Well, you need to go to your doctor and ask him, can you please solve this mystery for me? Because, you know, I can give you lots of ideas. I can tell you your skin is made of collagen. I can tell you have 7 layers of skin. That's usually my standard joke when I ask kids in Bible class, how many days of the week are there? And they go, 7. How many layers of skin do you have? Just, you know, an oddball question to see if they're paying attention. And they look at me like they don't know. But, you know, I'm always trying to set somebody up for success.
Well, I started taking gelatin. Do you think that might help?
Well, gelatin, I mean, that is something that potentially could help.
Yeah.
And so if a person's digestive tract is becoming weaker and they can't deliver the nutrients to where it needs to go, then that's a problem also. That's actually, I always think that Alzheimer's and dementia and Parkinson's is one of those issues also where you have just very poor nutrient delivery to the brain, so the brain's starving, so everything starts to die off. But that would just be my opinion.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, go back to your doctor and ask him to solve that mystery for you. I'd like to know what they say.
He probably can't.
Well, you got to give him a chance, though. And you know what? For all I know, he's going to say, I've been waiting every day of the month for an exciting case like yours. I would love to solve this functional issue.
Yeah. All righty, Doc. All right. We appreciate you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Bye-bye. All right, if you'd like to join me on the radio, there's a phone line open at 903-586-5257. All right, here we go. For years, mammograms have been heralded as an important screening method for early breast cancer detection. But what isn't widely known are the dangers and the lack of benefit from the screenings. All I want you to do is just evaluate this. You tell me if you believe it or not. And I got this from Joe Mercola, year 2016, on October 25th, so it's not even a year old. Many studies have found there is no improved mortality rate from regular screenings. The high rate of false positives leads to mental anguish and unnecessary medical treatments, and false negatives are a particular concern for women that have dense breast tissue. Additionally, the mammogram's radiation itself may contribute to breast cancer risk when screening is done repeatedly over a lifetime. That's just a fancy way of saying your breast can only handle so much gamma radiation, and eventually it'll cause cancer. That's what he's saying. Out of every 1,000 women who get regular mammograms over the course of their lives, half will receive a false positive. Let me think. What is half of 1,000? Oh, that's right, 500. And it says 10 of these will go on to receive. 10 of these women, that's 10 out of 1,000, so you can say that's 1%. They're going to go on to receive cancer treatment when there is no cancer. Do you know what cancer treatment is? That would be surgery, sometimes called slashing, radiation, sometimes that's called burning, and then chemotherapy. So 10 of those women out of 1,000 that get a mammogram, they're going to get chemotherapy when there's no cancer to begin with. Researchers have come to the conclusion that most women should probably avoid mammograms. That said, women who feel a lump in their breast should get a mammogram or a thermogram, which might actually be preferable. Other women can decide based on their personal values whether or not regular screening is in their best interest. Some of the best actions women can take to protect themselves from breast cancer are, well, it says self-nurture, but what I would suggest what he really means by that is making a decision to take care of yourself, reducing stress. I know you've heard this before. I've read so many articles that the more stress that you're under, the more cancer you have, and then getting optimal levels of vitamin D, ideally from the sun. Anyway, if you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line open at 903-586-5257. My eyes are trained toward the... There it goes. It just lit up. Here we go. Good morning. Thank you so much for your phone call today.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I've been listening to the gentleman about the skin, and I wanted to say, I do have the white spots. Tell me more about the white spots on your skin.
Well, and here's the angle that I was after. If you start seeing white spots on the skin, meaning there used to be normal melanin or pigmentation right there where your skin could be like a olive or darker colored under the sun, but if those white spots are there, that traces it directly right back to a gland called the pituitary. And see, the pituitary gland, besides producing a hormone that causes skin pigmentation, it also produces what's called human growth hormone. And I can tell you right now, if we gave him an infusion of human growth hormone, he would notice instantly that his skin is becoming thicker, because that's what human growth hormone does. But back to the white spots. That would be a sign that maybe your pituitary gland could be underperforming just a little bit.
Okay. Taking the supplement that you've mentioned before, does that help with that?
Which supplement is that?
I think you were talking about a pituitary supplement.
Yes, uh-huh. Well, if you're addressing the reason why, sure. And that's just a basic concept. You're going to feed and nourish your pituitary to give it a chance to come back to full functioning. See, the pituitary... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, the best way to nourish your pituitary is what?
Well, I would say it's multifactorial. I would say the pituitary does not like Splenda very well. I don't think the pituitary likes, aspartame? Any artificial sweeteners and MSG, I think those are particularly toxic and hard on the pituitary. Your pituitary requires manganese, in order to function optimally. I think it requires a little bit of zinc also. But at the end of the day, you've got to avoid the things that upset the pituitary. The pituitary can overwork just by being stressed out. So if you want to burn out a pituitary, just having chronic, unresolved emotional stress that never ends, that could do it right there. I mean, you understand that a person can actually have more stress than what they can handle, right?
Oh, yes.
But I would say sugar is probably one of the hardest things on the pituitary of all time.
Mm. It's interesting that you mentioned MSG. I cannot tolerate MSG. It makes me ill.
Well, see, that is like gold to me. If you tell me MSG makes you ill, that's your body's way of saying, hey, don't destroy the pituitary anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it amazes me. Some people seem to be able to eat it all day long. It doesn't bother them.
Well, and you know what? Everybody's different. Just because when they're eating the MSG, if their liver is still able to deal with it, good for them. But, you know, there's going to come a point in a person's life where things don't work so well, and you might be willing to forego the MSG for the sake of saving your liver and your brain.
Mm-hmm. And it's gotten to where it's so hard to eat out without getting into MSG.
You're right about that. One of the articles that I read years ago, and I'm sorry to say it this way, but I cannot 100% validate it, but I've tried. There is a common herb called go-to cola. And go-to cola, sometimes it's called Asiatica centella, if you like the scientific name of things. But go-to cola, a lot of doctors and physicians and herbalists, they like that very, very much when they're dealing with a pituitary issue. But then again, go-to cola is one of the most fabulous healers that the human being can consume. So you might consider that.
Well, not that I really want to increase my intake of MSG.
Talking about go-to cola.
Okay.
I'm not suggesting
and living longer.
do you want to live longer?
Yes, I would. I really would. Well, live healthy longer.
Oh yeah, that's the way I feel about it too. I asked a woman the other day. I said, "So, what are the ages of the people at the nursing home?" She said, "You know what? We've got some people in their 40s that have had strokes, and they're bedfast." Mm. She's in charge of therapy, but I just thought that was very interesting that, you know, you find people even in their 40s. Do you ever go to the nursing home to visit somebody?
Oh, I've had family members in there, spend a lot of time in the nursing home.
Oh, well, then you're very familiar, but aren't you sometimes just completely shocked that you can find very young people there?
Mm-hmm, yes.
I mean, it's just very, very sad. But anyway, to make a long story short, taking care of your pituitary is a very, very good proposition. So limiting your consumption of sugar and limiting stress is going to be a great help.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So you're saying that the white spots are a sign that your pituitary is not functioning like it should.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Have a great day.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, if you want to join me on the air at 903-586-5257, we'll go right to the phone lines. All right, I a little slow, sorry about that. Hi, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I thought I was pretty good, but I was looking at my lab report from a year ago. And I remember you talking about the, HCT, and I remember you, I think you said if it was 48, you should be scared.
Well, what I meant is that's a sign that, because when the number is 42 on hematocrit versus 48, you have half the heart attacks as compared to when it's 48. That just means your blood's thicker and dirty.
Right. Well, so, I looked at mine. I just picked it up at the doctor's office yesterday. I asked if I could have a copy, and mine is 48.
Well, that was
now,
smart
that
of
was
you
a
to
year
get
ago.
Oh, yeah, you're fine now, obviously.
So, but I was wondering, what can I do to lower that?
All right, now I'm Mr. Simple here. And you're going to be honest with me, I know. Do you do a good job of drinking plenty of water?
Well, I am now, but no, I didn't a year ago.
Well, and I'm being just very straight. If water, let me start over here. Every generous, thoughtful, beneficial chemical reaction that you want is going to take place when there's adequate water there. And so that would just be one clue that you're just chronically not drinking enough water. And so you realize the simple remedy or the fix is just to drink more water.
Oh, and that's great.
Do you mind if I tell you a story just real quick?
No, I'd love it.
I know I'm oversimplifying it, but I had a guy come see me the other day, and he had significant fluid retention throughout his body. But, I mean, I kind of thought that it was just like universally, it was in the abdomen, I felt like it was in his chest, I felt like it was around his lungs, his face was swollen, but when you got to his legs and feet, I mean, they were like fat sausages about to burst at the casing. And so he said, how much fluid do you think I'm holding on to? And I said, you know what, I'm only guessing. I'm going to say 30 pounds. He's going, wow. Do you really think 30 pounds? Yes, and I know I'm cutting to the chase here. He did everything that I asked him to do, except drink water. And I want you just to guess. What do you think the results were after about 2 weeks of doing everything that I asked him to do, except fulfilling my request for him to drink adequate water? What do you think the results were?
Maybe none.
You're correct. Now, and I said, okay, Mr. Can I call him Mr. Brown? That's just a made-up word. His name is not Brown. Actually, I could call him Mr. Purple because I've never heard anybody that name. But I said, Mr. Purple, you've done everything brilliantly, everything that I have requested of you. But I've got to be honest with you. Your liver and your kidneys, they are not going to be able to close the deal unless you give them what they need. And he goes, are we back to the water deal? I'm going, yeah, we are. And I said, just put it to the test. What have you got to lose? Try it and see what happens. And now, the rest of the story is, with water, there were over 20 pounds that came off of him just kind of magically all of a sudden. So, I mean, what do you think that does to me when I see stuff like that? It just reconfirms over and over again, you cannot get the body to work the way it's supposed to by starving it of water.
Well, that's very interesting. I've been drinking at least 60 ounces of water for the last, 6 weeks.
Oh, good. And if you're at 120 and you're not sweating, that's plenty.
Well, I'm not at 120, but I have lost, I'm losing about 2 pounds a week.
Oh, how are you losing? So you're telling me in reverse what I just told you about the man.
Okay. And I am trying to lose weight, and I think drinking the water is helping very much.
Oh, wow. Look at you. I'm not going to ask you to give me any information, but let's just say you weigh exactly 120 pounds. Then 60 ounces is probably going to be enough if you're not sweating. If you're sweating a lot, that changes everything. But if you weighed 140, then you would probably need 70 ounces a day. If you weighed 180, you'd probably need 90. I'm just giving it as an example.
Okay.
So we're kind of on the same page here.
I need to drink more water.
Well, I think that's a brilliant conclusion. And you know what? All you do is this right here. If your hematocrit was 48... And, of course, maybe I pulled it out of context because I don't remember from a year ago who I was talking to about the hematocrit. I know you're disappointed. You thought I had a complete photographic memory. No, I wish I did. But all you do is drink adequate water and then go back to the doctor in a few days if you really want to retest that.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, I am going to have lab work done in a month.
Oh, good.
So what I wanted to do is, in the meantime, do what I could and then see what that number is.
Well, don't you think you've got plenty of time to put it all to the test and see what happens?
I hope so.
Well, I tell you what. Let's do this right here. Have your follow-up blood test done and make sure they have the hematocrit and, you know, test all the other good stuff and just find out what happens.
Okay, I will do.
And you know what? I will believe every word that comes out of your mouth when you tell me about it.
Okay. Well, I sure appreciate you.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate you, too. I'm glad you called today.
And I listen every week.
Where are you calling from, by the way?
Quitman.
Quitman. Yes. Isn't that where the highly sophisticated, intelligent people live?
It's amazing.
That's what I've heard over and over again. Anyway, well, thank you so much for your phone call. I enjoyed every bit of it, ma'am.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
For you.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, if you want to join me on the radio and ask a question or make a comment, it's all yours right now. It's go time. 903-586-5257. Okay, welcome to the program. I'm Dr. Morgan. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
Back about the second caller, you talked about an Alzheimer's and Parkinson's person.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that there was insufficient nutrients to the brain to cause Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
I'm just saying that the brain starving to death is not getting the nutrients.
Okay, well, what kind of program am I going to need?
Well, let me give you some ideas. There is a book. Let me think of who it's written by. It'll come to me in just a second. George, I can't think of his last name. I'm sorry. Isn't that horrible that I can't remember? Anyway, I know what the title of the book is. The book is called The Brain's Way of Healing. And I would say it's maybe a year old. But what I find fascinating is he has exactly one chapter devoted to a man who completely overcame Parkinson's. Now, I'm telling you directly and straight up, it's a chapter devoted to a man who was able not only to reverse and overcome, but he completely wiped out his Parkinson's. I don't know if that registers or not, but I'm hoping it does. And if I were you, I would write down that title, The Brain's Way of Healing.
I have that written down.
Okay, excellent. Way to go, buddy. Good job. And so, at the very least, you deserve and you owe it to yourself to read that chapter on overcoming Parkinson's. And it's a very, very intriguing story. I'm telling you what, I'm moved almost every time I've read that before. But if you were to read that, then you ask yourself, can I actually do what that guy did to get what he got? And so if you ever see a person that doesn't have Parkinson's, you might ask him, hey, why do all the other people in your family have Parkinson's and you don't? And you might say, because I don't eat junk food and I take care of myself and I get plenty of sleep and I exercise and, oh yeah, I get plenty of oxygen to the brain. You know, in my fantasy world, I would be able to fly a hyperbaric oxygen chamber straight to your house in California. And I would let you be in that oxygen chamber for 2 hours a day. And then at the end of, 30 treatments, we'd find out if you're starting to function a whole lot better. But in the real world, just read that chapter on Parkinson's. And I think it's going to be pretty simple and straightforward that what this guy did, he greatly improved his oxygen levels to his brain. And he greatly enhanced nutrient delivery. And he just used one simple technique. But like anything else, it takes discipline, all right. You can't try it one time and then give up. So if you will, get that book, read it, and tell me if you're thoroughly impressed and you're glad that you have it. Because you can discipline yourself to do anything. It's just that a person, I see people all the time, and the people that go, I am at the end of myself, Dr. Morgan, I've got nowhere else to go, they are the ones that do it. The ones that walk in my door and say, Dr. Morgan, I just love listening to you on the radio so much. You're the greatest doctor of all time. I'll do anything that you say. They don't ever do anything that I say, and they don't ever follow through. You gotta have that moment in your life where you look at yourself in the mirror, and you're very honest, and you're going to say, is this really the direction I want to go? So if you'll get that book, The Brain's Way of Healing, it's a really, really good book.
Gotcha. The only problem is Governor Brown will probably tax it.
You know, you got a good point there. That's why I recommend you get it shipped in from Nevada and try to have it shipped in a brown paper sack where there's no markings at all. And just say, I have a plan for you. Have them write, this is a book written by Bill and Hillary Clinton. Please do not tax. Don't you think that would work?
Well, thank you very much.
And if you want to have donkeys stamped off, I'm joking. You know that, don't you? Anyway, thank you very much for your phone call. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I send you a picture of my latest acquisition.
Yeah, do that. I love it.
Okay.
All right. Take care, buddy. Bye bye. Yeah, if it's shipped from donations for the dent, never mind. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes. Let me turn this radio off.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay. I'm 66, and I have arthritis in my fingers.
Yeah.
And it's in the first joints.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the rheumatologist, and she did some tests and said it was not rheumatoid arthritis. It was just arthritis. And she told me to take Aleve.
Oh, yeah.
Twice a day.
Yeah, you should do that. Totally.
But knowing you, that you're not going to tell me to take Aleve twice a day. That's why
I just told you should follow her recommendations. No, if you care anything about your liver and your kidneys, won't do that.
I know. That's why I'm calling you. If there's anything else.
There is a system of health care, not in America. It might be called acupuncture or Chinese oriental medicine, but they always say the index finger is the liver, or represents the liver.
Mm-hmm.
And so, is there any chance that, you know, you've had some drugs in the past before?
Drugs like?
Prescription drugs?
I've had some, yes. When I've had surgery, they would give me, you know, I've had prescription drugs. I don't know what
I'm sorry. Have you had any issues with your gut or your digestive tract?
Yes, I have.
What was your surgical procedure for, just in general?
Well, I've had a heart bypass, and then I've had the hiatal hernia.
Well, see, and that right there is enough for me, even if I didn't hear the rest of them, because mm-hmm. if you had a heart bypass, I am completely convinced by reading the medical literature that one particular test that they offer is a screening test.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the calcium scoring test. I think Christus Mother Francis charges $49 for it, and ETMC charges $49 for it. But what it does is they're looking at just one particular unique finding in the heart, and they're looking for calcification. And I think the test is spot on accurate. And so any time that you have calcium that builds up where there's inflammation, mm-hmm. then you can bet your bottom dollar that your body is making every concerted effort to heal and repair the damaged arteries of the heart. So when they did the bypass, they were working on the coronary arteries that actually feed the heart itself, right?
Yes.
And so that's one of the reasons why, in your situation, you'd be nuts if you took a calcium supplement. Just nuts. Because your body's just going to take that calcium and shove it right into your finger and right into your heart.
Well, they told me to take calcium because they also did the bone density, and they said that had osteopenia.
Yeah.
So I'm taking quite a bit of calcium.
Well, you're going to have quite a bit of problems down the road. And,
okay.
And what I want you to do is do not take my word for it, please. Just look it up for yourself.
I will not.
Just take a look and read the studies. When a woman takes 1,000 milligrams of calcium or above, she has the highest heart attack rate of all time. She also has the highest fracture rate. So I know they're saying that, but you know what? I'm here this morning because my allegiance is to you. I do not have one ounce of concern what they think about what I'm saying, because the studies are very clear on this. They can recommend all the calcium to you that they want, but it's going to kill you and it's going to be your undoing. It's just going to make your arthritis worse. So we have to find out what is it that you are eating that's causing calcium to build up. And I can tell you my first guess. Now, calcium itself, when it builds up in the heart, that usually means the body's a little bit too acidic, because calcium is a more alkaline substance. Mm-hmm. And my first guess would be sugar. Could be wrong about that, but when we consume anything that's sugar or converts into sugar or acts like sugar in the body, what we're doing is we're causing insulin levels to go up. And when they do study after study after study showing that anything that causes a spike in insulin causes plaque and calcification in the body, then I tend to believe those studies very much.
Okay.
And so is there any chance that you're eating more sugar than what you should?
Probably right now. I tried not to eat sugar for a long time, but here lately I don't eat just tons of it, no.
Right.
But I will eat sugar.
Well,
and
I am proud of you, because you're trying to take care of yourself, so that's a good thing. There is a vitamin called vitamin
K2.
K2. So it's called minoquinone 4 or minoquinone 7. I think there's a few different varieties, but it's just vitamin K2. It's almost completely made by living organisms in the body. But K2 makes sure that calcium does not build up in the tissues where it doesn't belong. So that would be one thing that I would look at with this arthritis of your finger.
Okay.
You just might have a K2 deficiency.
Okay.
That's always what I think if there's been a bypass. Can I tell you a quick story?
Yes.
A woman came to see me, and I won't reveal too much information, because if she's listening, or the kids or the family or church members, it'll be like a dead giveaway. But she feels horrible, and she has felt horrible since January. And she's got some major, major health issues, and she's just saying, I've got no energy, my sleep is horrible, I toss and turn all night long, I'm in horrible pain, my feet are killing me, killing me, killing me. And so I asked her to make just a couple of changes, but I gave her vitamin K2. Mm-hmm. And she walks in my door for a follow-up visit about a month later, and I'm going, ma'am, do I know you? Because you're like dancing, and you're moving, and you're smiling and happy. And she goes, that's because I don't hurt anymore, and because I have lots of energy, and I'm working circles around everybody else at work, and I feel good. And I've got it like a completely different radiant woman in front of me, but she's just completely transformed. So do you think that, you know, maybe I have her attention now?
I think so.
But anyway, she's not hurting anymore. And I have seen that over and over and over again. So I don't want you to hurt, but if it were
can you buy this?
Oh, yeah. You can go to the health food store today and get it.
Okay.
Where do you live?
In Longview.
Oh, I just assumed it was from Quitman, because that's where the real intellectual types are from. Because you sounded very intellectual. I would never thought Longview.
Well, I'm sorry.
I'm only joking about that. But you can go to either, don't they have a natural grocer or the granary or Drug Emporium?
The granary and
well,
Drug Emporium.
The granary won't be open on Saturday, will it?
No, it will not be.
Okay. But I'm telling you, I would not delay. I would get some of it. But I always find with arthritis of the finger that people are eating foods that they shouldn't eat. And so I can just guess that could be corn or wheat or dairy or could be eggs.
I drink the lactose-free milk, so I don't know if that's...
You know what you should do is a simple experiment. Just go buy lemons at the store, buy a bag of them, or just buy beautiful specimens and take a lemon and rub a wedge of it all over your index fingers and let it air dry. See if the lemon juice starts to dissolve all that calcification debris where you can start moving your finger better. Because I've seen that work over and over again. Just applying lemon juice.
I can do that.
Or sometimes I'll use, and I realize this is not going to make logical sense, I'll just use a drop of what's called tea tree oil on the finger. You got nothing to lose.
I have some tea tree oil.
If you put a drop on your finger, then stick it in your eye, it's going to burn like hellfire, so don't do that. But just rub it on your fingers. But if you'll rub the lemon on there several times a day and let the lemon juice air dry to your skin, that way the solvents can kind of soak in. You know, how many people have been rushed to the emergency room from a complete allergic reaction from lemon juice? I've never heard of it.
None, probably.
None. So you can try those things, but the two organ systems that I would look at, it would be the gut and it would be the liver. Because ultimately, when there's arthritis of a finger, I always feel like I need to trace it back to where it's coming from. So if it was the thumbs, I almost think something in the lower part of the digestive tract is the culprit. If it was the ring finger, I almost think that's the body's way of telling us something's wrong with the kidney. Or the, I shouldn't say it that way. Maybe the kidneys are a bit sluggish or lazy. Does that make sense?
Yes. The ones that's worse is the middle finger and the pointing finger.
The middle finger.
They're actually crooked. They're growing.
Oh, yeah. And that's you're getting excessive debris that's building up and calcifying and crystals. Mm-hmm. But the middle finger, that's going to be your heart and blood and lungs. So I always think blood if it's the middle finger. Something's wrong with the blood. The blood's too dirty. I can tell you right now, if we had what's called a dark field microscope, if I took a drop of your blood, this is what your blood would show. It would show there's all this crystallized toxic debris that's floating around your blood. And then what I would do is I would convince you to eat a different way and clean your blood and then take another drop of blood and show how it's all just crystals have disappeared. So drink plenty of water. Wash this stuff out. I would be perfectly pleased if you made yourself lemonade every day. Just take the juice of a lemon, squeeze it in water, and drink it. I mean, if you like that sort of thing, I do.
Without the sugar.
Well, we might want to try a monk fruit or stevia or something like that. No. I think you really should have lots of sugar and a leaf.
Okay. Now, one other thing. I fell and broke my kneecap about 5 weeks ago, and I've had surgery and have a full leg cast.
Whose fault was that? Was that Fido's fault?
No, it was just my own, I guess.
I can't blame it on a dog?
I blamed it on my shoe.
Oh, okay.
Being in a hurry, and I fell, and I fell straight on my left knee, and it broke, and
they said
it just shattered.
Oh, bless your heart. So they put some baling wire around it, did they?
Mm-hmm, they did. Well, they actually did surgery, and they had to take out part of the kneecap, and then they attached the rest of it to the...
I really wish that you'd come see me because I've got some chicken wire in the backyard that I've been wanting to use, and I'm pretty sure I could have done that for you. And I've always wanted to do surgery. Just because I haven't done it before doesn't mean I won't do a good job.
So anyway, I've been even taking extra calcium thinking that's what I needed since I broke something.
Well,
so
no, if you're going
to
take calcium,
to just quit taking the calcium.
Well, the kind they're telling you, unless it's raw bone calcium. I had a woman call me on the phone, and she said, I've got a problem. I said, well, what happened? She said, I don't really want to tell you what happened, but I broke my sacrum.
Mm-hmm.
I said, how much pain are you in? She said, it's pretty bad. She said, what can I do? And I said, well, why don't we just take some calcifood? It's just raw bone material. So I happened to ask her husband, I said, how's she doing? He goes, she's doing better. But, I mean, that's about the only thing that I see that works consistently is just crushed animal bones in a tablet or a capsule or a powder. You're just looking for raw animal bones, not bone meal so much.
Okay.
So
and you get that at the...
Well, the product is called Calcifood, and it's the only raw bone supplement that I know of. Hey, I've got a story for you.
Okay.
This woman falls and hits her rib on the bathtub, edge of the bathtub, and she's telling me that she's in brutal pain for months. She can't get any relief. She's miserable. And I said, what are you doing? And she said, well, the chiropractor is adjusting me several times a week, and my eyes are just about to explode, and I'm going, what? And so I said, is it brutal? She goes, oh, yeah, I can barely tolerate the treatment. But anyway, to make a long story short, as she lets me examine the rib, I can tell you right now, I felt a huge gaping crack or fracture in the rib, and she like winced in pain like I'd stabbed her with an ice pick, just touching it. I mean, you could feel where it was broken, no question. And I said, well, why don't we just try this raw bone calcium right here? And she called me, she said, this is the first night that I've slept, but this raw bone calcium will go exactly where the fracture is.
Well, good.
And so you can put everything to the test, see if it works.
I will try it.
Thank you very much for your phone call, ma'am.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. All right, we have time for another phone call. Maybe one more, but I'm game. 903-586-5257. In the meantime, let me run this past you. Nope, we got a phone call. All right, good morning. Thanks for calling, ma'am.
Good morning. My question is, what if your, this is kind of nasty this morning, but anyway, your stool gets a lighter color than it should be?
You always think that there's a sluggishness in the liver and the gallbladder because they're not able to make enough bile salts and bile pigments. And so if you're making enough bile pigments, meaning your liver and your gallbladder are doing a good job, mm-hmm. it's going to be a brown color.
Okay.
Just like it wasn't that long ago, a woman sent me a text and she's saying, my husband, his bowel movement is white. And I said, that's the liver or the gallbladder. Well, they rushed him to the ER and they took his gallbladder out, and that's about the last I've heard of it. Mm. But I mean, so the lighter the color, the more the severity. So you're just going to have to let me use my loose talk here. If the liver starts to get a little bit clogged up and it's not working so well, you're going to have these lighter colored stools very, very consistently, but I'm telling you, brown is what you want.
Right.
Like the color of those expensive crocodile high heels you're going to be wearing to church tomorrow.
Right.
You do have crocodile high heels?
No.
Oh. Well, Dillard's is having a sale today. You should go and check them out. They're only $5.95.
Yeah, right.
No, but what you're looking at is... I like lemon juice and olive oil to help the liver work better. I am not against you drinking a cup of coffee or two in the morning to help your liver contract more efficiently. But yeah. I can tell you what, I would probably strongly recommend vegetables to you. Do you like vegetables?
Yes.
Oh, thank the good Lord. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know you're going to believe what I'm saying, but I meet people and they tell me they eat no vegetables. And I'm meaning, I'm telling you the truth, they don't eat any. Zero. Anyway, make a long story short, lemon juice and olive oil, that can be very helpful. Eating beets can be really helpful. If you told me you were going to eat just one raw beet a day, I would take it. I don't care if you put it in a blender and just pulverize it and add water or coconut milk to it and whatever you got to do to get it down. I don't care if you add apple juice to it.
Okay.
But we've got to start cleaning and repairing the liver, which means... if you start producing some bowel movements that are a bit darker, that's going to give me a lot of hope that you're moving the right direction, and I will be glad to praise you and compliment you.
Okay. All right. I will do that.
Any other questions?
Nope. I appreciate it.
All right. Do you know? Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Are you familiar with any drugs that are brutal to the liver and the gallbladder at the same time? Because I am. You ever heard of birth control pills?
Yeah, luckily, I'm past that age. I'm menopausal.
Have you had any antibiotics here lately?
No,
Are you taking any drugs of any kind?
I hurt my back last weekend and took some Advil.
Well, anti-inflammatories in some people. Did your fortunes turn for the worse after the Advil?
Yes.
Let's blame it on that then.
Yeah.
I have no trouble blaming it.
I don't either, but I thought Advil went through the kidneys, was closer to the kidneys, but maybe...
Your liver's got to completely process. It's not as bad as acetaminophen, but, you know, maybe it's exposed. There's a weakness in your liver, so feed it and take care of it, and let's see if it comes back to life again. It will.
Yeah, it will. I will do this.
Thank you very much, ma'am, for your phone call. I wish you the very best. Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
All right, you're listening to KBGS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.